singing in the rain.
Well, Mr. Simpson, we're really rolling.
Yeah, well, you can stop rolling at once.
Huh?
Don, Lena.
All right, everybody, save it.
Save it. Tell them to go home. We're shutting down for a few weeks.
What?
Well, don't just stand there. Tell them.
Everybody go home until further notice. What is this?
Yeah, what's the matter, R.F.?
The jazz singer. That's what's the matter. The jazz singer.
Oh, my darling little mammy. Now, little mammy. My little mammy.
No, no, this is no joke, Cosmo. It's a sensation. The public is screaming for more.
More what?
Talking pictures. Talking pictures.
Oh, it's just a freak.
Yeah, what a freak. We should have such a freak at this studio. I told you talking pictures were a menace, but no one would listen to me. Don, we're going to put our best feet forward. We're going to make the Dueling Cavalier into a talking picture.
Beautiful girl, you're a lovely picture. You were meant for me.
All I do is dream of you the whole night through.
You're all my lucky charms.
I'm loving you.
It has a fiddle ready for love. I can jump over the moon up above. It has a fiddle and ready for love.
Singing in the rain, just singing in the rain.
Make 'em laugh, make 'em laugh, make 'em laugh.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We've talked the whole night through.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Everybody dance. Broadway rhythm, it's got me. Everybody dance.
When I hear that happy beat, delight dancing down the street.
So there are bad movies, there are good movies, I think there are great movies, and then there are movies where some sort of unfathomable magic happens on screen. I think it's the kind of thing where you see it in the Citizen Kane or Casablanca or Star Wars, that each of them have these little moments that you seem to, something else happens that no one else can really equip for. And it really is a moment of movie magic, to borrow a phrase. And Singing in the Rain is one of those movies that has movie magic in it. It just does. It's probably the greatest musical ever made. It's a film that I shamelessly only saw for the first time about 10 years ago. To that point, I had sort of ignored it, which is, I'm not proud of. Sean, when did you first see it?
It's funny. Growing up, I always loved musicals. I grew up as a Disney kid, so musicals were always just in my blood. It's actually not even like an odd genre for me. Like in my head, there's always a song playing. I always hear music. I live my life as a musical. But sort of like you, my first experience to the MGM musicals happened because I used to work at Suncoast Motion Picture Company. Don't call it Suncoast Video. It's Suncoast Motion Picture Company. And I worked with a woman named Catherine. And we each got to pick a movie, I think like every month, that we would be able to watch. And her choice was That's Entertainment 3. And she had picked that because Gene Kelly had just recently passed away. So this would be playing on the overhead monitor. And, you know, I got sucked into all these different like musical vignettes and little behind the scenes stories and everything. So that's how it started for me with Gene Kelly and MGM musicals. And I said to someone, oh, you know, I've never seen Singin' in the Rain. And they're like, why? You've never seen it? I can't believe it. So a guy I worked with, Kevin, brought in probably like 3 Gene Kelly movies, and I watched them. And obviously I had heard of Singin' in the Rain, sure. And I knew Gene Kelly on the lamppost, you know, with his arm out. Like, everyone knows that clip. But I was not prepared for how funny Singin' in the Rain was. It is a musical comedy. It is so funny.
That is funny that you – I don't mean to use the same word, but that is funny that you say that, because that was the thing that got me hooked on it. Because – and I've mentioned this on the show before. Musicals were the last genre that I really sort of got into. You know, I was open to every other kind of genre except musicals. And I was like, ah, they're all square. And, you know, I mean, I'd seen Grease and seen a couple other ones. But I was pretty much like, Singin' in the Rain, I don't want to see that. It's old fogey music, and it's probably all saccharine. I wasn't interested. And then, actually, said it's a little more than 10 years ago, about 12, 13 years ago, it was on in the room of, I've mentioned on the show, Darlene Tracy. Her mom loved Singin' in the Rain, and she put it on. They put it on for her, and I was in the room at the time, and it started from the beginning, and I had never seen it, and I was just sort of sitting there, and I was sort of absentmindedly just sort of like, okay, and I started watching it. And like a couple of minutes in, when I saw how funny it was,
mm-hmm.
that it was so sarcastic.
Yes, yes.
I was like, wait a minute, this is this movie? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't know. I thought Singin' in the Rain was like one of those, like, so like, let's put on a show. And it is that kind of movie. But it is wickedly funny and very, very sharp satire about the Hollywood. And I completely became a fan at that point. Like, I was like, oh, this movie is so not the movie I thought it was. Because, I mean, it opens up for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, and you should go see it. And we'll get to it in a moment. You will have a chance to see it on the big screen if you live in certain areas. We'll mention that near the end of the show. It opens up – the whole thing opens up as a flashback, because it's the premiere of another film starring Gene Kelly's character, which is Don Lockwood, who's this movie star, and his co-star, Lena Lamont, who is Gene Hagen. And it's funny that we never hear Lena Lamont talk for a while for a good reason. And
I have to say, I think that is expertly done, because so often in movies, you just have bit players who never say anything so that they don't have to get paid. So going into this movie unknown, you think, oh, you know, she's just a bit player, nothing's going to come of her character, and that's why she doesn't talk. So I think that part's handled excellently.
Yeah, you're right, because, yeah, you think, like, well, she's kind of fourth billed in this movie. You think, when is she going to talk? And then, of course, when they reveal, she finally, we hear her talk, and you think she has this wonderfully mellifluous voice, and then you hear her talk like that, and you just, like, it's like the record scratch kind of thing. But before we get over it, after the opening song, which is, of course, the three leads, Gene Kelly, Donald O'Connor, Debbie Reynolds singing in the Rain, do you know who literally the first person is we hear talk and Singin' in the Rain?
Yes, and of course the two of us would know who this is.
Right, go ahead, reveal to everybody who that is.
It is Aunt Harriet.
That's right.
From the Batman 66 TV show.
That's right. She's uncredited in this movie, and she gets a big close-up, too. You're like, when I saw it, I was like, that's Aunt Harriet from Batman in this movie. I didn't know that. That was really cool. But yeah, I mean, the whole gist of this movie is that, say, Don and Lena Lamont are this, you know, famous motion picture silent duo based on other, you know, famous actors from the time. And it's right at the beginning of sound coming into film. And the problem is Lena Lamont has a voice that can break glass. And
yes.
The studio was run by R.F. Simpson, played by Millard Mitchell, who is one of my favorite character actors. I just love this guy, and he cracks me up as the head of the studio. And the whole thing is sound is coming in, and they have to figure out what they're going to do with Lena Lamont, because Lena Lamont cannot be recorded. That is not going to work. So, and then they have this sequence where Don runs into, they have the classic Hollywood meet cute, where he runs, he meets Kathy Seldon when he's being chased by his adoring fans, and they end up in her little jalopy, and they immediately kind of like each other, but slash don't like each other, because she's a snoot and says, you know, oh, I don't like movies, I don't go to movies, they're good for mass entertainment, but I prefer the stage and all this stuff. And then of course we find out that she is in fact wants to be an actress, and she's full of it. And
not only that, she is his biggest fan. She's seen all of his movies. She played that meeting very well.
Yeah, she plays it really. I mean, you know, God, the late great Debbie Reynolds. She is wonderful in this movie. And you know, it's amazing to think that when she was cast for this movie, she did not know how to dance. I mean, what a terrifying idea! That, oh, you're going to dance in this movie. Not only are you going to dance in a movie, you're going to dance with two of the most famous and durable and talented Hollywood dancers there are out there, Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor.
Which is true. If you're going to be thrown into the pool without knowing how to swim, that's scary. But if you think about it, you have one of the best dancers on earth as your teacher to guide you. And I'm sure it must have been scary, but looking at it that way, I think, man, if I want to learn how to dance from anyone, I want Gene Kelly to teach me the steps.
It's an interesting observation. Never thought about that. He was apparently a fairly harsh taskmaster. In terms of how he, because he co-directs the movie with Stanley Donen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd read different things over the years that he was really, really tough on everybody. When he did the, Donald O'Connor has the Make 'Em Laugh number, which is an absolute showstopper. That's another, you know, Donald O'Connor, let's talk about him for a minute. Donald O'Connor, another guy that I grew up with not thinking was funny, because he just, his humor was, you know, I grew up on like the original Saturday Night Live and Steve Martin and, you know, Ghostbusters. And so, you know, somebody like Donald O'Connor just seems so old hat. But, man, he's really funny in this movie.
I think this movie elevates everyone. Comden and Green were the screenwriters, and they had written On the Town before this. It's funny. For everything that is talked about Singing in the Rain with, obviously, Debbie Reynolds recently and Gene Kelly and the dancing and the singing, everything, the script doesn't get enough credit for being bitingly funny and for giving – everyone in this movie has fantastic lines that you can quote and requote.
Yeah, that's true. I absolutely agree with that. I mentioned R.F. Simpson, the Hollywood mogul. I love the bit where he throws this party and he has this great piece of footage which is going to introduce everybody to sound film, which is this black and white close-up of this guy with these horrible smoker's teeth. And he's like, you know, this is me talking, and the audio is syncopated.
A talking picture.
Talking picture. And I love it because he talks about that. R.F. Simpson says, Warner Brothers has got this talking picture with Jolson coming out, the jazz singer. It's gonna be a giant flop. And then cut to, like, three scenes later, and the jazz singer is this huge fan, and he goes, didn't I tell you it was a huge hit? I said it was going to be a huge hit. And it's like, and no one notices that. And it's like, wait a minute. You didn't say that. Like, I love all those little lines. Yeah, you're right. The script is really, really good.
And anytime there's some kind of new technology, I always think of R.F. Simpson and that scene saying that. Like, whether it's VR now, or, you know, YouTube back when that started, or, you know, I'm so worried because I have a 3D TV and I love 3D and I buy so many 3D Blu-rays, and I hope that fad never goes away. But every time some new piece of technology comes along, I think, is R.F. Simpson going to change his mind on this?
Yeah. I do love how, I mean, I'm going to be talking about him a lot just because I have such an affection for, like, odd supporting characters or supporting character actors, and I just love him. And this was one of the last things he ever did, actually. He died only a couple of years after this. But, like, I love how he's kind of, like, he's the head of the movie studio, and yet the way they present it, we all know from, you know, years of paying attention to Hollywood, Hollywood's a pretty cutthroat business, and movie studio heads are probably pretty vicious, and yet he is like the most avuncular, sweet, you know, when Lena Lamont threatens to ruin Kathy Seldon's career, he's like, that would be awful, I'm not going to do it to her, that would be the wrong thing to do, and you're like, you know, the morality of it is really bothering him.
That may be the one misstep in the script, as having a Hollywood studio executive with a heart of gold.
Yeah. I'm going to let you ruin her career. That would be the wrong thing. Yeah, like, okay, all right, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. I heard someone, I forget who wrote it, but I read it a couple of years ago, They talked about the idea between Gene Kelly as a dancer and Fred Astaire. And the whole, Fred Astaire's whole sort of, I hate to use the word shtick because that sort of, you know, I don't mean to make it sound as a negative. But like his thing was that he was graceful and then it looked effortless. You know, like he was gliding on air. And Gene Kelly's appeal was very different. He was all about the physicality. You know,
he was very masculine. He was very athletic.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can sort of feel, I mean, you mentioned On the Town. And he's, you know, of course, he's in that movie. And him and Sinatra and that third guy whose name I can never remember.
Jules Pfeiffer.
There, look at Jules Pfeiffer.
Wait, is that, no, Jules Munchen.
Jules Munchen. I was sorry. Like, oh my God, sorry. Jules Pfeiffer is in On the Town.
It's like, because I'm talking to you, I expect to talk about comics,
yeah,
not
there
films.
We go. Yeah, oh my God, Jules Pfeiffer. But I mean, like, Gene Kelly really is like a hoof, like he's, you know, he hits the floor with a loud tap, you know, like that's part of his appeal is the, as you said, the masculine physical energy that he has. And the whole sequence he has with the Broadway number with Sid Charisse.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I mean, Sid Charisse, unbelievable. Like, she was able to get that in a movie before, you know, like she is crazy sexy.
You're talking about this, and it's funny because her husband said she could always tell who she was dancing with that day because if she came home with black and blue marks, she was dancing with Gene Kelly.
Yeah, I mean I mean we're jumping ahead a little, but the whole Broadway. What's the name of that number?
The Broadway Melody. The
Broadway Melody, where they sort of envision this whole other thing, and it's. That it's Gene Kelly's Don Lockwood is dancing with this unnamed woman played by Sid Charisse, and it turns into sort of this, you know, sort of weird impressionistic thing. And the sets in that scene. I'm with her with the flowing robe, that sash that she has.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
Flows out. It's like you can't believe that. Like in an age of digital effects, you're like they're really doing this in camera. This is really happening in front of me. This thing that is flowing 10 feet into the air. And then it turns into that whole kind of like film noir thing. And it's got that guy in it who has got a scar on his face who's flipping a coin.
I think we're going to say the same thing. Coming off of Aunt Harriet at the beginning, I always imagine that's how they would have done Two-Face on the Batman 66 show. He's flipping the coin. He has the horrible scar.
The first time I ever saw that, I was like, That's Two-Face. This is a live-action Two-Face. I mean, this thing is, I mean, aside from, again, the amazing sets, like, I just love the whole, I mean, I've talked about before on the show, like, any movie that shows me Hollywood backlots, I'm sold. You know, I am sold on showing that. And then the scene where Don Lockwood takes Kathy Seldon into that warehouse in one of the shooting stages, and he shows her all the different things they can do. He like flips the gel lights, turns this on, turns that on. Like I find that's and like she's a babe in the woods because she doesn't know anything about this stuff, and he of course is an old hand. Like I find that whole thing to be so magical because to me it's like it's Don Lockwood is showing a character is showing Kathy the magic of Hollywood while the movie itself is showing you the magic of Hollywood.
Well, the other thing I think is so great about that scene and so many others in it, characters, even though they are filming a musical, so often in this movie, they don't just break out into song. There's always a reason for them to be singing. In this case, he's taking her through and he says, you know, I'm an actor. Normally they feed me my lines. You know, I need a reason to say this. So he sets up his own situation so that he can tell her how he feels.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole singing in the rain number is an expression of his joy at that moment because at that point he's really fallen in love with Kathy. And I mean, there are other. I mean, geez, again, there's so many songs to talk about. I mean, outside the singing in the rain number, which really probably deserves its own show. Like, do you have a particular favorite song among the other ones?
Well, it's funny. I certainly understand the importance of the singing in the rain number, and you know, you could talk 10,000 hours about that number, but my two favorite numbers in the entire movie are Good Morning and the Broadway Ballet. Good Morning especially, it is just an expression of unbridled joy. Like, the three of them are so happy. You know, 20 minutes before, you know, they're coming back from the premiere, and the premiere is a horrible flop. because of all the technological reasons and Lena's voice, and they are just down on their luck. You know, this is going to be the end of their careers. Nothing's going to happen after this. They're talking, you know, they're joking around about the situation. They stumble upon the quote-unquote scheme of dubbing Debbie Reynolds' voice for Lena Lamont, and suddenly that changes everything. They are happy, you know, that they have a future ahead of them. You know, they have a plan. They have a way out. You know, they are so happy, and they've been up all night, and it's 1:30 in the morning, and now, oh my gosh, we have this idea. Let's sing about it. Let's dance all over this beautiful mansion.
Yeah, that's another thing. You just can't believe that they're doing this in camera. You're seeing all these people do this, you know? I mean, and you said Debbie Reynolds is keeping up with them, and the song is great. And the whole idea that he's going to lose his home, you know, like the night before, he's like, because as you mentioned, the film is a giant flop, and he's like, I'm going to lose my – I love – Donald O'Connor gets a great line where Don Lockwood says, I'm going to lose this house. And Donald O'Connor says, oh, no, they don't repossess houses on weekends. They don't wait till Monday morning at least. Yeah.
Well, and the wonderful thing about the movie, talking about, like, such joy – and it's funny, I actually wrote down the specific times I was watching it. There's the line, nothing could be grander than to be in Louisiana. And that happens at 1 hour, 2 minutes, and 36 seconds. And the look on Gene Kelly's face when they say that, and also like a minute later, 1 hour, 3 minutes, and 17 seconds, right before he grabs Debbie Reynolds' hands and they start tap dancing sideways, just look at his face. Like, it is such joy and happiness and love. I you know, obviously when you're watching Gene Kelly, you're watching his whole body and especially like his feet, but just to watch his face at those two moments, oh my gosh, like it literally makes me feel warm. I just get so happy watching him dance.
Yeah. And there is something sort of beautiful about the idea of like turning a disaster into something mm-hmm. positive. Cause I mean, the whole idea is, of course, I said, they record sound for and I love that whole sequence of them trying to record sound for the first time. And they have the microphone in Lena Lamont's bosom and you can hear her heartbeat, which apparently really happened when they were recording sound.
I was just going to say all of those instances of those audio problems are real problems that happened when they were learning how to reproduce sound for talkies for the first time.
Right. It makes sense. I love them in the booth. And then the fact that she keeps turning away. So it's like you hear her kind of talk, kind of like that. You're like, and the guy playing the director, Roscoe Dexter, Douglas Fowley, he is such kind of a ninny. I have to think that that's like Stanley Donen and Gene Kelly's, you know, joke at their own expense. And
sure.
Joke at other directors for making this director like such kind of a goofball.
We're talking about – I was talking earlier about everyone having, like, great lines. Lena Lamont – like, as much as you hate Lena Lamont, her lines are the best to re-quote. Because in that scene, she has the great line, I can't make love to a bush.
You do. It's funny. Like, in the beginning, you do – like, I feel a little sorry for her because it's not her fault she has a bad voice exactly. But then, you know, when you she has a chance to be kind of a nice person, and she blows
right.
it every time.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
I mean, she's your classic sort of diva. I mean, the whole thing on the set where she treats everybody, the crew, really poorly. And, you know, she goes after Kathy Seldon really just to ruin her at
right.
a certain point.
Well, and the thing is, we were talking about this movie being timeless. And the two instances, as long as Hollywood and Hollywood phoniness exists,
yeah.
This movie will be timeless. And just recently, at the end, they exposed Lena Lamont by having her sing a song. You know, she's singing in the front of the curtain. Debbie Reynolds is singing behind. And then Donald O'Connor comes up and starts singing. The curtain rises. You see that she's not singing. And, of course, just a few weeks ago, we had Mariah Carey with her audio debacle. So things in this movie, the 50-year-old movie, are literally happening 2 weeks ago.
I love that moment where the three of them, where Don and RF and Cosmo decide to pull the rope up and pull up the curtain. I just love that they act like the Three Stooges. You know,
and,
like,
and I think you love it because they are pulling the curtain in time to the music.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's – I will think about the Singing in the Rain number. I mean, first of all, again, done in camera, you know, done for real. All that water pouring on Gene Kelly, and I read that they had to shoot it, I think, in the afternoon, because in the mornings, everybody in L.A. waters their lawns, and the water pressure wasn't high enough. So they
it's funny you said that, because I have literally heard the exact opposite. I heard that after 5, when people came home from work, the water pressure dropped.
Okay, maybe I got it backwards.
Well, I don't know if you have, because it's funny. For the Singin' in the Rain number, I have heard that they put milk in the water when it rains so that it shows up on camera.
Yep.
I've heard that Gene Kelly had a fever of 103 when they filmed it.
Yep.
I heard that his wool suit continued to shrink. And then I think for everything I heard that that wasn't true.
Hmm.
But I don't care.
Yeah.
I want them all to be true because that just adds to it.
Yeah, that number is – I mean, first of all, it was originally supposed to be the three of them. It was supposed to be, I think, Kathy, Cosmo, and Don were supposed to all do it together. And then at some point along the line, they decided it would be more effective if it was just Don. And I think that's history proves that it turned out the way it was supposed to turn, especially since it's right after the Good Morning number where that's the three of them. You wouldn't need to see them all again. I think it works better that he gets a solo number. But I saw this movie on the big screen a couple of years ago. They reran it, and it was a really great experience because the theater was packed. And, you know, this movie is beautiful to look at. The colors are gorgeous. So seeing it on the big screen is great. So we're watching it, and there was a woman behind me, an older woman. And during the Singin' in the Rain number, right at the part where it ends, because they let it fade out. Because after he does the whole number, and then he's splashing, and he runs afoul of the cop. And the cop just gives him that dirty look of like, what the hell are you doing?
Dancing and singing in the rain.
And he wanders off, and the song just kind of gets quieter and quieter and fades out. And just when it got, like, just almost silent but not quite, I heard the woman behind me go, "Oh, wow." And it was so genuine. It was like, so sweet, because she was really, like, in that moment, she was really I mean, I get the sense this is not the first time she's seen this movie, but she was really transported in that moment. And normally, while I hate people that talk during the movie, I was okay with that, because it was a genuine moment. She was... you know, really taken aback by the beauty of this moment. And it's probably like my favorite thing to think about when I think about this movie.
Well, the other thing that people don't really talk about in terms of the storyline with Don and Kathy, if you think about it, the Good Morning number, they talk about how it's the next day. They say it's 1:30 in the morning right before they start singing Good Morning. So in that time space, you know, they sang Good Morning. They talked about the movie. They talked about their plans. Cosmo went home. Don is driving Kathy back to her place. So it has to be 2:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Don's been up all day. He was nervous about the movie premiere.
Right.
You know, he had a horrible experience at the premiere. Now the installation of joy. So it's like 3:00 in the morning when he's singing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's you get that that sort of manic thing, you know, when you've been up all night and you're yeah, it is a remarkable sequence, and it's just the kind of, it's funny that you mentioned that you saw this movie the first time through That's Entertainment, because it's like, that's exactly what those movies were for anybody who listening who doesn't know what those movies are. That's Entertainment, and I think they did one called That's Dancing.
We'll get to that in my recommendations.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. We'll get to that. Yeah, yeah. Those are fun little things. We can get to those in a moment. Yeah, I mean, I have to wonder, like, at what point did Donnan and Kelly know in the footage, you know, when you look back on the next day, do you go, holy crap, we really got that, you know? Because apparently it was just done in the one, not one take, but it was done in one sequence. It wasn't reshot. It wasn't like they went back the next day to redo it. They did it, and they were like, we got it, and that's it.
Correct. And I think that's something we can bring up, too, in terms of, in general, musicals of this time. You know, I definitely grew up like an 80s MTV video kid, you know, fast editing. And whereas I loved that growing up, and to some degree I still love that, when you watch these musicals, they're not done in one take, but these takes are long. There are certain takes where it's a minute and a half, 2 minutes of unedited footage of these people performing, dancing, lip syncing. I mean, it's just wonderful. And you never see that today anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. They let the camera sort of, you know, pan out a little and just let everything transpire. That is, again, that is something that it's interesting sort of to think about that, you know, as we get into the, you know, everything is just quick cut. I mean, they can't do, you know, movies don't let anybody walk across a room anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be cut. And there's something very sort of relaxing to watch a bunch of things transpire in front of you in a sequence, as opposed to constantly cutting back and forth and getting close-ups and back and forth. You know, it's sort of nice to just be like, okay, these are the real people doing this real thing in front of me. I mean, the physical toll that Donald O'Connor must have put on his body during the Make 'Em Laugh number is almost painful to look at. I mean, he turns himself into a pretzel, the way he slams himself onto the floor. He runs up a wall like Jackie Chan for pizza.
he had padding on under his clothes because of all the falls and all the physicalness of his routine.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And his number ends, the only way it could end is him literally going through a wall.
You're right, yeah.
Smashing through a wall. There's nothing else left to do. I have done all the physical things I can do in these three walls, so I'm just going to just burst through the wall at this point, because why not? I mean, yeah, again, it's like, it is, and apparently that was something that they did that whole number, and then they found out that there was a problem with the aperture.
Yep.
And so the whole thing had to be done all over again, and he just did it. Oh, unbelievable.
Well, and the nice thing about that number too is, and obviously every number is choreographed within an inch of his life, but the wonderful thing about that is he will be walking along singing, and then his voice kind of drops out, and he looks at the dummy, and then he starts doing something physical. So it feels very – it does feel like he is performing this for Don right here,
right?
Because he's talking – oh, and then he sees, I'm going to use that. Like, it's just done so well.
Yeah. That's funny. There's a bit like that in White Christmas, which everyone knows I love, where Danny Kaye is trying to
– Never heard of it. Never heard of it.
Okay. All right. Smart. Where Danny Kaye is trying to keep he's trying to pair – Judy and Bob together, and then that guy cuts in, and he's singing about, and he's, there's Cheek Should Meet, and his voice gets all strained because he's trying to break them up, and it's like, yeah, it's a real moment. It's like this is one person communicating to another through song. It's not a fake thing. Yeah, you mentioned recommendations. Now, I mean, what you want to talk about, that's entertainment and that's dancing. Explain to people what those were, what those movies were. Because I saw those when I was growing up.
That's Entertainment 2, and That's Entertainment 3 are all basically clip shows. But they are the best presented clip show you will ever see, or a best of package that you will ever see. At the time, it was an anniversary for MGM, and actually, I'm not sure which anniversary it was for MGM. It might have been the 50th anniversary of MGM. And they got old MGM stars, obviously they were old at the time, to introduce the best of MGM musical numbers to a brand new audience. The first one came out, it was a tremendous hit, and it really is the best numbers from the different MGM musicals. That was so popular, I think 2 years later, they had That's Entertainment 2, and the hosts of that were Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire.
Wow.
And in fact, that's the only time that they danced together on screen was That's Entertainment 2.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I'm sorry. Along with the Babbitt and the Bromide. But that was just one number. That wasn't an entire musical movie. Then a couple years later, That's Entertainment 3 came along. And That's Entertainment 3 is actually my favorite of the three. Because that one has a lot of outtake numbers that were filmed for the movies but never included in the actual movie. So if you've never seen any of them, obviously start off with That's Entertainment. That's Entertainment 2 is good, although that one also has some comedy routines in it, which are fine, but don't hold up with repeated viewings the way a musical number will. Mm. And then That's Entertainment 3 is wonderful. And there is, you talked about it earlier, there is a movie called That's Dancing, which focuses just on the dancing portions of the MGM musicals.
Okay. It's funny, I remember those movies. They used to play them on, like, UHF stations from back when people there were, that was a thing, UHF. But they used to play, and I used to watch them. I remember I would watch them because they were just, I like the idea of clips, you know, of seeing bits and pieces. There was a similar movie called The World of Abbott and Costello, which is just a clips of a bunch of their movies thrown together. And, you know, when you're that young, you don't, you know, you're not bothered by the fact that this movie's a clip show, what I'm getting here. This is, but I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that, that you were introduced to Singing in the Rain through That's Entertainment, which is exactly what it was meant to do. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what they made that movie for, was for, get, was to, for you to sample other movies and go, oh, what's this? Oh, okay, let me watch this.
And for me, it came about at the perfect time. It's funny, I hadn't seen That's Entertainment or That's Entertainment 2 before I saw That's Entertainment 3. That was the first one I saw. And at that time, it was fantastic because a lot of the movies were still on Turner Classic Movies, and they still are. But also, the record company Rhino was releasing all of the soundtracks in these gorgeously presented CD packages. Each CD booklet was like 24, 48 pages. Some of them were double discs. They were releasing them on DVD for the first time. So it was a great time to come on board and experience all of these.
Yeah.
And really, any MGM musical that you get is not going to be bad. You know, you're not going to be like, oh, that person can't sing. Oh, that person can't dance. And, you know, there are some that are fantastic and wonderful. But any MGM musical that you watch is going to be worth watching.
Yeah, I mean, they knew what they were doing, which is kind of why, you know, they when Hollywood started changing over into the, which is, again, it's kind of what this is about in its own, you know, in a different way. But, like, when you know, people's tastes changed from the 60s into the 70s, MGM didn't kind of know what to do. Because MGM was like, we make musicals. That we're good at that. You know, and once audiences were like, we don't want musicals anymore. We want, you know, Bonnie and Clyde or The Graduate or Planet of the Apes. MGM was sort of like, you know, I mean, they just didn't know. And so they just kept making musicals. And, you know, they had made some infamous sort of flops later on at Dr. Doolittle and Star and a couple other ones that are, you know, not particularly well received at this, you know, nowadays. But, like, you know, it is a sad thing because you think, but they were, you know, nowadays, obviously with La La Land, which is, I'd say, is probably the odds-on favorite to win Best Picture, and Chicago won Best Picture a couple years ago.
Right.
You could get back to doing musicals full-time again, probably.
I never understood people who go to see movies. I never understood the argument of people singing, just walking down the street, breaking out in song and dance. That's so unrealistic. Why are you going to the movies? You're not going to the movies to see if I can accept that someone can be bitten by a radioactive spider and not die, I can believe that someone can break out into a song.
That giant blue beam that's going to blow up the planet, that's fine. I'm totally all right with that. But people singing and dancing, no, I'm not accepting this.
You can say you don't like musicals, that's fine. But don't say they're unrealistic. Because what in movies is realistic? That's why I'm going to the movies.
Yeah, yeah. I absolutely would say, like I said, this was the last genre that I really sort of accepted, you know, was able to say I'm watching. And now that I'm started getting into them and I've been watching some of them, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm totally in. And Singing in the Rain just holds up really, really well. Obviously, it's said it's probably the greatest musical ever made. It's on the AFI Top 100. And it is part of the Turner Classic Movies Big Screen Classic Series, where they show old movies on the big screen, and you will be able to go see Singing in the Rain on the big screen, because it's going to be playing, I think, on the 15th, Sunday, January 15th. So go to TCM.com, and you can find the Big Screen Classics, and you might be able to go see Singing in the Rain in your local theater, which is absolutely worth doing. I've seen it a couple times, and I'm probably going to go again because it's just not a movie that gets old.
I love it. And anytime I see a podcast and it's something that I want to listen to, I'll either read the book or I'll watch the movie. So hopefully people will see it in the theater and then listen to us go on about it.
That would be nice. That would be nice. And we have to do one little shout out at the end here is with the passing of Debbie Reynolds a couple of weeks ago, very tragically, Rita Moreno is who plays Zelda's aunt, the great name Zelda Zanders. She plays a friend of Lena Lamont, who's a kind of a busybody.
Oh, she's a pal.
Yeah, she's a real pal. She is the last surviving cast member of Singing in the Rain, and so she's still with us, and she's an EGOT person. Mm-hmm. She's got an EGOT, and so she's been in. It's one of those things where you look back on her career, well, she's in a lot of great things, but she's in this movie, and she is still with us, thankfully. So, you know, I hope did she get to, like, you know, like did Ben Wankiewicz does those things. The guy from Turner Classic Movies where he intros the movie. I hope she's in on this. Like, I'd like to see her thoughts about, because, I mean, it's like, you know, she was on the set of making Singing in the Rain, you know? That's kind of an amazing thing, you know? Like, it's legendary.
And she is still active in the business. She's in the new Netflix update of One Day at a Time.
Is she really? I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. Good for her. Oh, that's great. That's terrific. Oh, that's cool. Well, everybody, go see Singing in the Rain. Do it for Rita Moreno. If you do it for no one else, do it for Rita Moreno.
She's absolutely.
So I think that's going to do it for Singing in the Rain. Sean, thank you so much for doing this, man. We talked about this a long time ago, and I kept just meaning to get to it, and then I realized it was the perfect time. So thank you so much for coming on and talking about the movie. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime, any musical, let me know.
That's good to know. Okay, I got a whole bunch of them I want to talk about. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, it's at Film and Water Pod. And you can find this and all our other episodes and all our shows on our network site, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And until next week, that's a wrap.
Well, Singing in the Rain is generational. I think it really relates to young people. They like it because it has life. And it's the story is so simple, and it's boy meets girl, but it's movie star meets beginner. It was actually the character was a lot like me, Debbie, at the time. I was 17. This was a young girl who was wanting to be a dancer, wanting to be in show business, and then she accidentally meets a famous movie star, let's say Fred Astaire type, but it was Gene Kelly, and Betty. Adolph Comden and Betty Green. I always say them off wrong, right? It's Adolph Green and Betty Comden. Okay. So they were really funny, and they wrote the script. Arthur Freed produced it, and Gene Kelly really was the creative being, but he had an awful lot of wonderful talent, you know, like Andre Previn. These are fabulous. Roger Edens, who wrote Dear Mr. Gable for Judy Garland. I'm writing this to you. He was a genius for lyrics. How Moses supposes his toes is a roses. That's Roger Edens. And he's a definite talent that we all miss. So I was just lucky that they put me in that part that suited me. In other words, I didn't have to be a well-trained actress, which I certainly, when I was 17, I was brand new in the movie, so I certainly had no training. But if the part is you, and you're not afraid, and I wasn't afraid of, I had, you know, I was so dumb that I didn't feel you could fail. I felt it was me, and I really just marched straight ahead, and I wasn't frightened of the huge task. I had never danced. So to dance with Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor in 3 months, well, anybody else should have passed out. But I didn't, and I just thought, well, let's get started.